Hello and welcome to the Lost Harrow podcast, your weekly podcast for movies and other pop culture things we like. With me this week is a special guest, Eric Fedorchik.
Hi, everybody.
And as usual, I'm joined by Arlen Harrow.
Yo.
And I'm Eric Sayer. I'm hosting this week so Arlen doesn't have two Erics with him.
Hey, Eric. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So this week we're doing, it's Halloween time. It's October. So we're doing our top five or five, choosing five of our favorite horror films to talk about. I've said multiple times, I've not seen a lot of horror films, so I hope I get good recommendations to watch on this week's show.
Oh, that'll be fun then, because This might be some stuff for you to dig into.
Yeah, I know both of you are way more into horror than me, or have been.
Yeah. And I wanted for George Heck, because I wanted somebody other than Connor to be the person that we get for horror. And I know Fedorchik has he has as extensive, if not a longer, history with it.
So. Well, yeah, gotta get that age dig in there, don't you?
Hey, I didn't mean it that way.
I know.
So, Eric, you're a guest. Do you want to start with your first pick?
My first pick is, and actually looking at my list, it's one of two Carpenter films, but In the Mouth of Madness. I don't know how familiar either of you are with that movie.
I'm very familiar.
Okay. Eric,
I don't know anything about it. I know it's a film that Carpenter directed and that exists.
Okay. You have the bare minimum of knowledge about it. Yeah, it's interesting because it's very much like his love letter to H.P. Lovecraft and that entire idea of like a cosmic horror, and it involves a writer that's channeling it or is being possessed essentially by this cosmic horror. But it's just a really cool idea, and it's great because it doesn't outright decide to be like, all right, we're going to have Cthulhu and all that whatnot. It's his own creation, and it's interesting. It has a lot of the tropes, but it goes its own direction, and it also has Sam Neill in it, and he puts on a great performance the whole time.
Yeah, he's excellent in that movie, and it has the same nihilism and that sense of like hopelessness that The Thing has, and Prince of Darkness, and they're all part of like a spiritual trilogy in the same way that the Edgar Wright's movies are, the Shaun of the Dead and
the Cornetto trilogy.
And that same idea of that same like thing that connects them, it's the same. Carpenter does a very similar thing in these movies, and if you watch them back to back, you would really get that sense from them.
Well, yeah, if I remember correctly, he called it his End of the World trilogy, because each one is essentially the end of the world, just in a different way.
It's the
practical special effects are great. It's got Viggo the Carpathian as some crazy townsperson where the writer Sutter Kane has been living. It's full of so much great imagery that doesn't bathe you in it for too long. It gives you just short glimpses of it, and it works so well, because I've always believed horror is best when it's brief.
Also, it kind of shits on Stephen King.
A little bit.
Doesn't happen much.
No.
I kind of love it.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, yeah. It's one horror master shitting on another horror master, which, again, doesn't happen very much.
No. Yeah. But it's definitely a fun time, and it's something unique. Like, I haven't seen many people do anything like this before, so that was definitely why it made my list.
Yeah, good pick, I would say.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sounds really good. I just put it on my list of stuff to watch this October, because I'm watching only horror films.
Awesome.
Arlen, do you want to go with your first pick?
Yeah, and I decided to go easy with this one. Something a little bit more obvious, but maybe not. The Witch. And I've talked about this movie for hours at this point. But,
The Witch is also my first pick.
Oh, great.
Nice.
Well, if you want to pick another one, I'm fine doing that. Or I can pick another one.
I have some backup stuff, so you can.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. But yeah, The Witch. It's still a great movie. I just started watching it like yesterday, just as a background thing, and it still works. It's still super super creepy, and yeah, I think. I still hear the occasional, I didn't find that movie very interesting, or I found that movie boring, and I'm like, how? Why?
See, for me, I actually, my father and one of my friends who's a history professor both were of the opinion, like, they just weren't into it. The history professor was saying, like, he understands a lot of what makes it creepy outside of the supernatural element, just like the whole horror of your people who have been expelled from the only community you have in this new world, right, trying to make a living in this terrible, terrible place that you don't know what's going to happen, and just believing that the devil is always the cause for everything. And then my dad was just like, And I mean, my dad enjoys, like, movies. Like, he enjoys good horror movies, but yeah, it wasn't for him. So I let him go too, because he's 70 something. So
I do think you have to be, like, in the right mood to watch this film, because it's very, very slow, and it's very it builds on itself. And if you're not in the mood at the beginning, you just never care about anything.
Right. Yeah,
and I do love that the movie never makes you doubt what's going on. Like, you see the witch in the first minute or so, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And after that, the horror is never the witch itself as much as it's the family life and the nature around it. And the horror itself is freedom, which I think makes, for me, the end of the movie is so cathartic, it's incredible. It's like my favorite, maybe one of my favorites ending to any film.
I love the ending of that movie. I love that the ending of that movie isn't some big showdown where she's like trying to set a trap for the witches, like Home Alone, but with witches or something. I love that it's like, no, I think that what I want is to become part of something else. To find a new family. That's how I've always read it, at least.
See, I always read it as she doesn't have a choice at that point. Like, her entire family is dead. Her support system is gone. She's a young woman who is a member of a now dead outcast family. Like, she has no place left to turn but to live deliciously, as she was offered.
Yeah, that's also part of it. And her arc is leaning towards this, like, and it's very subtle, and that's one of the things I like about it, is her story is her realizing that this is not what she wants, that Protestantism, Calvinism is not for her, and you see her struggling with that from the very beginning of the movie, when her father's on trial, and I like how that sort of builds on top of itself, and she sees what that kind of rigid belief system can do to people. She saw her father undone by his own pride. She saw her mother undone by her own envy. Her brother undone by his lustfulness. Like, and how that was all amplified by what they believed, not purified.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I like the way that movie ends. I think that's the point of that.
And it has the single most horrific breastfeeding scene I think I've ever seen in a movie.
Oh, God. that's the other thing. There's some really disturbing imagery in this movie. And it comes at always the right moment. It's a great, great film. I've always compared it to The Shining, and I think that they are perfect pairs for one another. Almost, like, in terms of pacing, personally think that the director, whose name I'm forgetting, I think he watched The Shining and he was like taking notes and like, this should be this long and this should go on for this long and so on and so forth.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a that's the witch, I guess.
Eric, yeah. Did you have a backup?
No, I'll just start with my second and see how it goes. My second was A Train to Busan. The Korean action horror movie, but still very much still very scary, only because of how those zombies are portrayed in the film.
Yeah, very much so.
I haven't seen a lot of the like scary zombie films. Like I haven't seen 28 Days Later. Or is it 8 weeks?
Which 28 days. 28 days was the first one.
Okay, I haven't seen either. But like this movie is both like a super good action movie, it has like terrifying zombie moments, and I think my favorite thing about this movie is how it manages to give you characters that you like immediately, that you're invested to immediately, then it takes them away from you one by one. Mm-hmm. And it's and it destroys you until the very end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 There isn't a single character death where I'm like, well, I mean, I saw that coming. Yeah. It's not that big a deal. Like, they're all pretty significant. No.
Yeah, exactly. All those characters become important from the moment you meet them, just because... Mm-hmm. It's incredible, I think, how the movie in a minute can make you understand and like a character and make it feel like you know them already, and then it makes you root for them while fighting the zombies in some of the best like action scenes inside the train.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then it's not enough.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that made this movie so made me stand up and take notice of it the most while watching it was like it didn't make any of the characters fall into like an archetype. Like everyone was very well rounded and was an individual. Like even angry businessman who was scared, like you still actually got a little bit of information about him that made him more than just a caricature. And that's that was the thing that I thought it did really well in comparison to a lot of other zombie movies, because a lot of the characters in most zombie movies are very one note, with the exception of like one or two people.
Yeah,
and the story being centered on a bad dad.
Mm-hmm.
it's such a good choice, I guess.
Yeah, because it gives you immediate emotional weight.
Yeah.
An emotion, a relationship between these characters, and extra motivation for the dad because he fucks up and he knows he fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he has nothing else left. The only thing he can try to do is save his daughter, because that's him thinking he can save the relationship he has with her at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's
very, very well done film.
It's yeah, it's a shockingly strong film that I would not expect and, to be as good as it is.
Yeah. And when these zombies start climbing one on top of each other and just feel like feel the best kept present I can give is like the Ghost Army in Lord of the Rings 3.
Yep.
Yeah. That's pretty accurate. Yeah, it's just like every choice feels like it's part of a whole, which is something that I really enjoy. And I think that adds to just about every movie that I, you know, and especially I think South Korean directors are really good at that. They're really good at making something that feels like it's part of a bigger thing, and nothing feels disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this movie, it benefits heavily from that.
Yeah.
Because there are places where it could easily shift very rapidly, tonally, but it really, it fits. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a place for everything in that film, and it all works astoundingly well.
Yeah.
I guess that's on to my next choice. Or did you have something else you wanted to say, Eric?
Go ahead, Eric.
Okay. My next pick was Dog Soldiers. which is a is it Neil Marshall is the name of the director?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, the director of The Descent and also Doomsday, if I remember correctly, the one with Rona Mitra.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Dog Soldiers is, I mean, I love unapologetically, and I mean, there's no reason to apologize, but I love American Werewolf in London. It is a phenomenal werewolf film, but it's focusing more on the human aspect of it. And the Howling, there are parts of me that I really enjoy that movie, but it's also feels like about 45 minutes of cutout scenes from the animated film Heavy Metal. Dog Soldiers, though, is just pure intentions where it's soldiers fighting werewolves. It's I don't know how familiar you are with this movie, Eric.
No, not at all.
Yeah, the premise is that it's a group of SAS soldiers who are on a training mission, and the area, is it Ireland or Scotland? I'm trying to remember. It's been a while.
I believe it's Scotland, but I can't be sure.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this movie in a while. Otherwise, this would be on my list, probably, but I remember loving it. So
it's a, yeah. Where it is they end up landing on their mission, you come to find out that there's a family of werewolves that have been living in that area, and it's them using all of their SAS training trying to fight off these werewolves. And it's a great, like with Train to Busan, it's a great action film that happens to have a wonderful horror element, and once again it's all amazing practical effects. Like they didn't skimp on the practical effects, and they all look great. And once again, each of the characters is given maybe not as well-rounded a performance as they could be, but they are all given their own moment to shine throughout the movie.
Yeah, and I remember, and Sean Pertwee, I believe, is the lead of the movie.
Yes,
I might be a mistake.
No, I believe you're correct.
He gives a very good performance.
Yeah.
In this movie, and he's a good choice as a lead, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know if he could carry like a huge budget film on his shoulders, but for something like this that I would say is like not micro budget, but is somewhere lower than medium, like he's the perfect man for it because he has all the talents needed.
Yeah, yeah. And in a world where werewolves don't really get the shine that they deserve, if you ask me. This is one of the few like really good werewolf movies that I would suggest from the last 20-25 years or so.
Easily.
Yeah. Good pick. Very good pick.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I really like werewolves.
You should seek this out. Yeah. I think you would dig this.
Yeah. I guess it's my next. This one might be another shared one, so we'll see. And this is another more recent one. I don't think it'd be a surprise for anyone. Annihilation.
Okay.
Because I can't get this movie out of my head. and it's just, it made its way very high up my list. But, you know, like all lists, this could be very low, much lower as time goes on. But at the moment, I still think about it almost every single day. So, and I watched it in February. So that's something.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's not the same. I've been thinking about it nonstop. It's such a, it's so good. But at the same time, like, it's a movie that I can't decide. Like, I'm still trying to wonder, like, what really makes it work and what it's trying to say as a whole. Like, it's some stuff is kind of evident, but it still has like a. I'm just thinking about rewatching it now.
Yeah, every time I think about it, I'm like, I should rewatch that.
It's on Netflix now.
Oh,
it's here.
Okay.
It's not here yet because America's bad.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, just, it got dumped onto Netflix before
everywhere in the world.
Yeah. Except for America.
Yeah. No, Canada's same, but it just got added like yesterday.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I was a movie I was talking with my dad about when he was visiting over the weekend, and I just now that you guys mentioning it again reminds me I haven't watched it in probably about 3 months. So yeah, I think I need to revisit that film very soon.
Yeah, it's just it's and again, like I can describe entire scenes to you in detail. And that's a testament to the strength of the filmmaking in that movie. There's something about how much control there is in that movie over when the subject is about chaos. Like something about that and how that sort of just
Also, how the movie
control
plays with
chaos.
your understanding of the world, because as the world gets more chaotic, you start understanding the rules, and then it just breaks those rules again and again until the end, where there's no point of reference to what's happening for you and for the character.
No, that's a really good point.
And it also, it's horrific in, on so many different levels. on just on existential levels, on in physical levels, emotionally, just all these different areas. All these, it's just it's a very unnerving film that if you watch it and you don't at least if it doesn't imprint on your being in some way, maybe you weren't paying attention to it. So,
No, that's a great choice.
Anyway, next pick, I
Yeah.
think.
Yeah. My second pick is another Korean film, Thirst, Park Chan-wook film this time.
Oh, I've never seen this. It's something I've been meaning to watch forever, but
I haven't seen this one either, but I am planning to very soon, so.
Okay, so it's how I'll put it, it's an adaptation of a French naturalist novel like from Emile Zola, who wrote about proletariat during the Industrial Revolution in France, but with no supernatural, very naturalistic writing about stuff that's going on and how fucked up everything was. And I love Zola. He's one of my favorite French writer. But yeah, and it's an adaptation with vampires. So it's both an existential. It's my favorite kind of vampire story. It's an existential story about a vampire that has no reasons of li living. Like it's a pre this the basic story is a priest gets joins experiments on a disease that can't be cured. He then try they're trying to cure the disease, so he volunteers as a potential so they give him the sickness. He gets really sick, he gets a blood transfusion, and he's cured miraculously. And then discovers that he's basically a vampire.
Interesting.
So he can't be in the sun without getting hurt, and he's just he knew he was going to die. Like he volunteered just because he thought it was the right thing to do as a priest. And now he died. He basically died, and he's no he quits priesthood and just tries to rejoin civilization, try to rejoin people he was friends with when he was younger, and meets this woman that that has a really boring life and is attracted to him kind of because he's a priest and kind of because he's a vampire, even though she doesn't know.
Interesting.
He and there it starts getting it's very more of a drama until that part of the story where she gets he makes her a vampire, and then it's her she because she's power hungry, she has no moral code, she's not like him and an old priest that lives with very specific morals, only killing small animals or getting blood transfusions to survive. She doesn't give a fuck about anything. And that's when it gets into like classic Park Chan-wook, very fucked up scenes.
Oh, it sounds interesting because it sounds like it becomes a moral dilemma for the priest when he initially becomes a vampire, and then it comes back around to the moral dilemma of being a vampire that's trying to be good while dealing with someone who isn't quite as good.
Yeah, and it's as a whole, the story arc isn't very horror-y until, like I said, it gets into very violent, graphic moments that I won't describe because they're very good to watch by themselves. Like a lot of, again, Park Chan-wook stuff.
Hmm. Right.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, aside from obvious reasons that Eric knows for why I'm going to be watching this soon, I'm definitely going to watch it because.
It's one that I've had on my queue forever, and I've just never gotten around to it.
Super good. I think it's maybe my favorite of his movies.
Oh wow! Okay.
High praise.
All right. Eric, do you want to go ahead?
My next one, it's probably the most well-known out of the films that I have on here, but I just rewatched it recently, and it hits all the exact right notes, and that's Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Woods is pretty much the perfect send-up / homage to any of the slashers / monsters / zombie movies from the 80s, but it has that underlying comedic element with the group that's controlling all of this to basically feed the ancient ones that live beneath them, if I remember. If that's the best way to describe it. Eric, are you familiar with this movie at all?
Yes, I haven't seen it just because I was trying to like watch a couple of other stuff because I heard it's more enjoyable after seeing. Like, I just saw Evil Dead 2 that I felt like I had to watch before that.
No, that's probably a good call to watch some other films that would fall under like horror comedy, like because this one is it. Cabin in the Woods definitely does not try to act like it's too serious. Like, it definitely mixes in the comedy well while still telling a serious story, but it handles everything so well, and it has so many different homages to various things. Like, there's the Pinhead analog in it. It's I'm trying to remember some of the other ones. Like,
there are so many little ones. Like, I mean, like, just the elevator scene, which we won't go into detail about, but that scene alone has so many little tiny references to other things.
It's just there's so many things happening at one time that it's hard to keep track of it all. Like, you're like, oh, that's an homage. Oh my gosh, and they're doing that. Oh, and now that. Oh God, what? Like, just there's so much happening, and it has such a great narrative. Like, you go in thinking it's one movie, and then like 20 minutes in, maybe half an hour in, you discover like, oh, this is a very different movie than I thought I was going into. Mm-hmm. And it's worth your time to revisit, and it's definitely worth your time to watch for the first time if you've never seen it before, because regardless of whatever ickiness there might be about Joss Whedon, it's a Drew Goddard film, and it's great.
It's a very strong movie. The cast, none of them are like giant stars now, with the exception of Chris Hemsworth. But the cast is really strong, and the acting is just phenomenal. And the comedic performances is so many strong aspects to that film. It's worth your time.
Yeah, it's a love letter to horror, and it's handled in such a great way.
And I'm not sure if some horror is needed for anybody who's listening. Is like, I don't really watch a lot of horror movies, but I'm listening to this anyway. If you really just are not into horror movies and you watch Cabin in the Woods, I think you'll still have a fun time.
Yeah.
Especially if you watch it in a group of people.
Yes.
It's a great party movie. Definitely. I've definitely had Halloween parties before, and it's one of my go-tos. So,
yeah. Yeah, so no, there's solid. There's something for everybody in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we want to go to the next one, I guess? Yeah. Which would be mine, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. My next one, I feel like this one's fallen out a little bit. I don't know why exactly, but The Fly.
Oh.
1986 The Fly.
Yeah, Cronenberg.
86? 86? Yeah. 87, one of those two.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cronenberg, remake of The Fly. It's fantastic.
Yes.
It's, yeah, I just love this movie. I love the way that it uses the concept of The Fly, but it goes in a very different direction. But it still explores some of the same themes about what it means to be human. Does that change when you add the DNA of another species to your own? but, and also, you know, the performances in this movie are great. Gina Davis, wow. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my pick.
Yeah. It handles, like, it's body horror light for the people who have heard some terrible things about David Cronenberg films, not bad things, but just how horrific they can be. But it's done in an approachable way, for lack of a better term. So. Yeah,
I would say so. And it's a slow ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a just a constant people's limbs falling off and things things of that nature.
And stingers coming out of their armpits and things along those lines. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's totally worth anybody's time to see. And it's Jeff Goldblum in full, like, how old was he when he did that movie? Like, late 20s, early 30s?
Maybe 29.
Yeah.
Maybe. And he's just going for it. Yeah. He's just going full Goldblum.
Yeah. Because he looks great. Yeah.
He does. He's ripped, which is something that I always forget every time I watch it. But yeah, he's great. Him and Gina Davis have this very natural chemistry.
Yes, they do.
And when I learned that they dated off screen, I was like, yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's just everything about it is really strong. I can't really think of any like problems that I have, any criticisms that I would even launch at it. That's my pick.
I've watched some of one of the Fly movies. I have no idea which, and it's been so long that I can't say.
Well, the second one has Eric Stoltz in it. He's the main character. So if he was in it, then you were watching the second one.
No, I mean, it was so long ago that I just remember like a machine and a fly, and that's about.
Okay, well, that could be the first or second one.
That could be anything. Yeah, that could be a lot of things. I'm curious to see what your reaction will be when you.
I'm gonna watch it this month. It's on the list. So.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's a good movie. A good pair with The Thing, actually. Yes. I think.
It's very much a practical effects powerhouse.
Yeah. That's the thing. If you're someone who really enjoys practical effects and makeup effects and good makeup design, that movie is it's just all there. It's a good package. And if you really haven't seen it, because I really do feel like nobody talks about it anymore. Maybe that's just me, but yeah.
No, I definitely agree with that point.
Other Eric, I guess, whichever one of you.
This would be Sayor.
Yeah, it's my turn. My third movie is Under the Shadow. The Iranian film. It's basically, if I had to give a brief description, it's Iranian Babadook, which you'll probably hear a bit about on another episode of this show in a couple of weeks. But still, it's a very, for me, it's one of the scariest movies I've seen. It's super disturbing. It takes place in Iran during the Iran-Iraq War of the late 90s. It's the story of a mother and her son staying in a they're staying in their house while the city is being evacuated, and a missile lands on that house, and inside the missile is a spirit, or what some characters in the movie call a djinn. And the djinn is a terrifying creature that haunts her dreams, completely make her question everything she understands about reality. And at the same time, it's a movie about that family dealing with war in the country and everyone in their building moving away, and that mother that wants to stay the longest possible because she wants her husband to return from the war. And it does that. It gets more and more disturbing until the very end, and until the djinn reveal itself.
It's a great movie. Fedora, have you heard that or seen that movie before?
I've seen it when I've been looking through Netflix, and I've been meaning, like, it's one of those things that there are certain times that, and this makes me sound like a terrible American, but I don't have the energy to watch a film with subtitles. Like, sometimes I just want to put a film on and just zone out. And it's one of those movies that I've heard nothing but praise for, and I want to see it, but no, I haven't got around to it. But with the way Eric just described it, it sounds like it would actually be a really good pairing with The Witch. It sounds like it has a lot of the same themes in it, that it's not just about the supernatural horror, but it's also about the horror of family, essentially.
And it's a movie that uses its creature as a metaphor in the same way that Babadook does, which is why the comparison is so easy. Whereas in Babadook, it's all about grief, and Under the Shadow, it's all about like war and how it stays with you and follows you, and this trauma of dealing with war and being in a war-torn country, and something I've seen and know people that have experienced being from Lebanon. So for me, it's very, very much a movie that's close to home, and that's that talks about war in a very smart and effective way.
I agree wholeheartedly with all of that. Babadook is a great comparison. The Witch is a good comparison. I would even go back as far back as Poltergeist. I think it even works there. Both films are about family, and they're about the relationship between a mother and a daughter or a child. I can't remember, is it her son or her daughter? I can't actually. I haven't seen the movie in a while. But a mother and her child. That's a big part of it as well. And I think the way that all those metaphors work together, it's a very strong movie, and I would definitely suggest it. It's worth the subtitles. If you're on Netflix, make sure you change the language options, because Netflix put it in English for you first.
Don't watch it in English. I wanted to watch bits of it the other day just to try to remember like how it does the djinn, and it's not good in English at all.
Netflix does this sometimes. They'll play a foreign language show for you, and they'll do their weird English dub that sounds like it's a computer voice, and it's really, really bad.
There was a recent series that was out of Germany. I can't remember the name of it. That apparently the dub is supposed to be atrocious, and
it's real bad.
Yeah, and that's another one that I want to jump into at some point, but that's neither here nor there. Alright, I guess my next choice then.
Well, Eric, go ahead, Eric.
My next choice is Event Horizon. I don't know how. I'm guessing you're not familiar with this one either, Eric.
No, not at all.
This one is cosmic horror in space. The premise is that they create a dimensional gate, it folds space time. Folds space time.
Like wrinkle in time, basically.
There's a there's a ship, the Event Horizon, that had the There's a ship called the Event Horizon that that had this space-time folding on it, and it disappeared for 20 years, 30 years. I apologize, everyone, for that. I expect
Otis is making his first appearance on the Lost Haro podcast.
Yeah, he's everywhere. It disappears for 20 years, and there's a group of scientists and not mercenaries, but military-based people who who end up going out to find it because it reappears. And you then find out where it had gone while it had been folding space-time. And it's not the best place on Earth that it could possibly go. It has great performance by Lawrence Fishburne. Also has the actor who would play Malfoy's father, Lucius Malfoy. And I forget who the... go ahead.
I was going to say, Sam Neill returns.
Yes, yes. Number two on my list of Sam Neill films of horror.
So this is Paul W.S. Anderson movie?
Yes.
It's his best film.
Okay.
Yes.
It's so heads and tails above all the rest of his movies. And it's almost, you're like, did somebody else direct this? Did somebody else do this?
Yes.
He has a very Bryan Singer-esque career about him. Our personal favorite on this podcast, Roland Emmerich.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, no, that's a very apt metaphor. But yeah, it handles the idea of cosmic horror in such a new and interesting way. Like they take the cosmic both literally and figuratively with this movie, and Sam Neill puts in a great performance that I was not expecting to be as creepy as he is in it.
Yeah. Like if there is a problem with this movie, it's some of the effects aren't as good.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of the scares are like, okay,
that's predictable.
But you know, I mean, it's a fun ghost movie in space. So
cool.
If that's something that you're looking for, go for it.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Nice.
Yeah.
Arlen.
That would be you, Arlen.
Yes. This one, I guess I did pick stuff that people do know, but this is another one that I think people have forgotten about. And it is Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which has gotten some love later on after bad remakes and one pretty bad crossover. this is Wes Craven's sort of run-up to Scream, almost, like a rough draft, because it's very self-aware, and it's sort of his way of taking Freddy back, because he left the franchise for all those years. He really had nothing to do with it. And then in 1994, I want to say 1992, something like 94. That.
Somewhere in that time frame.
Yeah, he came back and he made this movie that is much darker than a lot of the other Nightmare films. Really makes turns Freddy into this dark demonic force that extends past the movies. If anyone who's unfamiliar with what the actual concept of the movie is, it takes place in the real world, and it follows the actress who played Nancy in the original film and the final girl of the original Nightmare on Elm Street, as she is living her life as the woman who was in two Nightmare on Elm Street films. And her, you know, living with the fact that that's all she's really known for, and sort of just dealing with that and dealing with how the fandom of Nightmare on Elm Street kind of became bigger than the actual movie, and the force or whatever that this audience has sort of been giving power to has been growing, and it's taken on this new light, and it's decided to go to leave the movies and attack the people who were in the original film. So yeah, it's sort of this like meta commentary on how media evolves and the power that we give to these characters, to these horror movie icons. Yeah, it's just a very interesting movie and an interesting exploration of all these concepts. And it's very almost a precursor to Scream or Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, definitely.
And it's definitely worth your time if you haven't watched any of the Nightmare movies, with exception of the first one. Maybe watch the first one and then watch this, and you'll have a good time.
And I would honestly suggest that if you are a fan of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, watch the documentary about the entire series shortly after you see this one, because it's like you said, pretty much everything I could say, that it's a wonderful meta comment on the nature of media and film and the power that people give to what should ostensibly be a horror figure that they shouldn't be enjoying the presence of. I mean, if I remember correctly, Craven had said that he thought of this movie because he can remember seeing little kids dressed up as Freddy for Halloween and how people were cheering for him and whatnot, and he was like, this is really messed up. Like, he wanted to bring Freddy back into this, like, he's not a clown and he's not somebody to be emulated. He's this horrific monster.
Yeah. All that is true.
This actually sounds... Yeah, I heard the name. I had no idea what it was about, and now I'm really, really interested. I want to watch this. It sounds great.
Yeah, it's not at all what you would expect from the... What is it? The sixth movie in the Nightmare on Elm Street series?
Something like that. To me, it's the true sequel to Nightmare on Elm Street. Dream Warriors is it's fine. It's
fun.
Fluff. But it's not... It doesn't have the same weight that this movie or the original movie does.
No.
It does what I would want from sort of a soft reboot, you know, taking things back to what they were and really just reinventing the monster in an interesting way that still feels respectful of where that monster started.
That's a great choice.
Movie to check out. Sayor, I guess it's yours.
Yeah, my next pick is the movie probably I think that fucked me up the most after watching it. Like, I slept bad for like a couple of days, and I couldn't stop thinking about this movie, and it was super depressing. And it's not a movie that's... it's The Wailing, another Korean film.
Okay, this is another one that's on my list that I have yet to see.
Same.
Yeah, it came out a couple of years ago. It takes place in a small village in Korea where people are getting randomly sick. People don't know where the sickness comes from, what it is, but they get progressively more and more sick until they basically turn into... like zombies for a few minutes, where they try to kill anyone that's close to them, and then they die. It's not a big epidemic. There's not a lot of people getting sick, but there's like one, then another one, and it's very like one after the other, and it's timed with the arrival of a Japanese man that comes to the village, and it's basically a movie that starts out being just about xenophobia and about people thinking that he brought that sickness and going to him and almost like beating him, asking him to leave the city and to get away, which doesn't do anything for stopping the sickness. And at the same time, it's full of very driven by superstition. They bring a shaman to the city, to the town, to try to stop the sickness. They do rituals. It's all very unnatural. And the main character is a cop, a really bad cop, in a small town in Korea, in a small town in the mountains. And the story really gets going when his daughter gets sick, and he has just no idea what's going on, and is driven by just the last thing he finds out every time. And he gets more and more desperate because his daughter is dying, and nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows who started this, if there's a cure, if there's a way to stop it. And it's a movie about that lack of knowledge, that lack of understanding, and how it drives everyone in this town more and more toward themselves. And it's a movie that takes every hopeful moment it can give and just destroys it one after the other, and then ends in one of the bleakest ending I've ever seen in a film. And that's what really, like I said, depressed me for days.
That sounds right up my alley.
Yeah. It's incredibly done. It does have like a bit of pacing issues. It's like more than, it's 2 hours and a half long, which I know can be a lot, but it's always good. It's always does that. It creates a universe where those characters again feel like actual human beings, all of them. Mm-hmm. And it ends in like the one of the bleakest moments, and also one of the best reveals you can imagine.
Definitely more sold than I was before.
Yeah, I mean, I was always curious based on the description, but having someone who's actually seen it tell me that it's got one of the bleakest endings they've ever seen, along with everything else, sounds like it should be right up my alley.
It's really good, and I never want to watch that movie again.
Okay, that's actually, yeah, that's selling, and it being October, I'm more inclined to want to watch something like that. Like, yeah, that's
wow.
Yeah, definitely, it's gonna move up my list of things to watch.
It's
very much driven by a character that wants to do the best thing possible, but that just doesn't know, and everything feels like it's against him and driving him to make the wrong choice every time.
You've pitched us on two movies that are, I'm gonna compare them to Let the Right One In. So anybody's like, I don't know if I'll like this, it sounds similar, so maybe, you know, if you like those, you'll like that one and Thirst. So
I guess it's mine.
Last one,
this is like, I'm a big fan of a lot of John Carpenter's work up to a certain point, and this honestly I think is one of his creepiest and most perfect horror films outside of The Thing. Prince of Darkness.
Ooh, the other part of the Apocalypse trilogy.
That's, it's like I said when I first started mentioning what I was going to be on my list, is that I wanted to go for some things that might be a little bit left of center, or things that people might not be that aware of. But I implore everyone to see The Prince of Darkness. It is, it's so good. Eric, are you familiar with this movie at all?
No, again, I know it's, I know it's John Carpenter, and that's about it.
Easiest way to surmise it is that there's a group of scientists, theologists, and theoretical scientists who go to a church that supposedly has Satan in it, in the basement.
Yep.
And everything goes haywire from there. And it just, it's not even that you really see anything that's, oh, look, it's, you know, the giant red horned creature. It's more what's happening to these people as they turn against each other or possessed or whatever the case might be. It just it's so effective at creeping you out in little ways that there's a man who turns to bugs at one point, and it's done in a way that, while it sounds ridiculous, is done really well. I mean, Alice Cooper is in it. It's just
a man kills a man with a bike.
Exactly. It's so good. It's all these people in this church trying to figure out what's going on, when this is going to happen, and then while they're doing all this, they discover they're trapped in there by an army of homeless people who are being controlled by Satan to keep them in there so his rebirth can happen. And I just go see it. There's so much that I want to say, but I can't say it because it's so hard to accurately describe for people who might not be familiar with it. And it's got Donald Pleasence in it, so you can't really go wrong with that.
All the regulars, with exception to Kurt Russell. It's like it's all the people you expect to see in a Carpenter movie show up. Donald Pleasence and Pi from Big Trouble in Little China. If I have a problem with the movie, it's as someone who's watched a lot of Carpenter's movies, it might feel a little bit repetitive.
I can see that.
But that's only for someone who has seen all of his movies, or at least the essential ones, but it's still a fun time.
There's something about it that just has this creeping dread the whole time you're watching it, and you can't quite put your finger on it. And I think the thing that sold me on it the most the first time I saw it was the scenes when they're dreaming and you hear a recording in the background that slowly reveals more each time you see their dream sequence. But it just, the recording itself saying that we are coming to you with a recording from the year 19, and then it cuts out and you can see a figure in the doorway of the church, if I remember correctly, but you can't make out who it is. There's something about that you get just like a 30, 45 second shot of that, and it's just horrific. It's horrific, and I love it. I mean, mind you, it's horrific for 1985, 86, but I think it's still wonderfully effective today.
The setup and payoff in that movie is just, it's just really, really, really good. That's, again, solid pick. Really anything Carpenter. Haven't seen many Carpenter movies.
If you need to see Carpenter films, go with the End of the World trilogy, Thing, Prince of Darkness, and In the Mouth of Madness.
I love The Thing, so I'm gonna watch those two.
Yes, they are peak Carpenter.
Arlen, you want to go with your last pick, or do you have anything else to say, Eric?
No, that was it. Okay.
All right. Let's just pause for a second.
I'm just gonna
pausing at an hour because my roommate is an asshole.
That's really, I can't really hear anything now. Like it was just a little bit here and there earlier.
I'm not sure. Well, how much can you hear right now? Like, is it super loud, or is it...
I don't really hear anything.
Some, like, a tiny bit of background noise, but it's not...
If that's the case, because I'm never sure how it sounds to everybody else until I listen to it back later. My final pick. This one is newer, but it's one that I don't think a lot of people have seen. The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
It sounds familiar.
This is a movie that I really like. It's kind of like a... It's not really a horror movie at first. It's more of a mystery, but it unfolds in some very scary directions. The cast is really great. It's Brian Cox. Who played Hannibal and many other people. Emil Hirsch. Speed Racer himself. and a woman who I haven't seen anything else named Olwyn Kelly as the titular Autopsy of Jane Doe. She is she is Jane Doe. She's a body that is found sort of in the basement of this house, and the people in that house are just, like, dead in some very brutal ways. And the body is taken to this sort of local mom and pop morgue run by Emil Hirsch and Brian Cox. And it's sort of just like them trying to figure out what happened. Why does this body look the way that it does? And if you haven't seen the movie, if you look up pictures, her eyes are white, her skin is like pearl white. And as they start to dig into her, as you do in an autopsy, they find all kinds of weird stuff, weird symbols, you know, weird markings. And then some spooky stuff starts to happen. Some weird shit starts going on. But yeah, it's really effective, really scary. The relationship between Emil Hirsch and Brian Cox is very interesting and well developed, and it feels like a real father and son, in just in every aspect, in the ways that they fight, in the ways that they, you know, make up after fighting, just every aspect of their relationship feels very real, in such a very tight, contained space that even if some of the scares feel cheap or don't seem like they were handled as well as they could be done, you care enough about these characters that it doesn't matter. And even if you aren't a fan of the ending, which is kind of, it's not going to make everybody happy.
Well, I think that's a given with almost any horror movie, is that you're not going to satisfy everyone 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
But Brian Cox is pretty much an automatic sell for me, so I will definitely check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like the type of movie that's going to scare the shit out of me.
It probably will. The scares in this movie are so well done. And it's not a movie though it's not a roller coaster kind of horror movie. It is much more like a haunted house but it's a haunted house where the scares are like few and far in between. It's all about the atmosphere of the haunted house.
It's more of a methadone release type of horror movie or scary movie. Okay, I can get behind that.
And it's a lot of like, hey, wait, that wasn't there before. That was
okay.
So it's very interesting in that way, and it's just a very effective movie. It uses all the tricks in the book, but it uses them very well. Definitely check out The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Nice.
All right. That's all of our lists.
Oh, Eric, you didn't.
I think we did a good job.
Yeah, no, I had The Witch as my fifth one. Like, I had other stuff on the side. Like, I'd almost put Mandy on there because it's already in my favorites at this point. But no, maybe I have a last one. It's Yorgos Lanthimos' The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh, I've been wanting to see that.
I've been trying to convince Arlen to see this movie for like.
This is the thing. I've had other people tell me that I'm going to hate that movie. So it's like, okay, I don't know who to trust. I don't know. But I'm definitely going to check it out if you're willing to put it on this list. Like, yeah.
He was the director of Dogtooth, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The Lobster.
The Lobster. All right. Yeah. All right, yeah, I definitely want to check it out then.
Okay, so the thing of a Sacred Deer is like a movie that exists where everything that's happening on screen is made to make you uncomfortable. Like every camera shot, every shot is from a weird angle using different lens that never feel quite appropriate. The performances it's. The two of the leads are it's Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman that are almost human but not really. But it all works inside this world that's just like normal people going through their lives, except for a young boy with some kind of supernatural power. So you, the story is Colin Farrell is a cardiologist. He does open heart surgery, and he did surgery on the boy's father, but he died, and the boy blames him, and is slowly invading his life, like becoming part of his family, becoming close to his daughter. Everyone in the family likes him, but it's all very, it all feels kind of comfortable on scene. Like they feel like they're just interacting with each other, but it's nothing is natural in their interaction. How they talk, especially how they act, it's a bit robotic. It's a bit, it's just a, like an inch off, which just make the music is always unnerving. It's a very weird experience, and the story and the horror part is when the boy tells Colin Farrell that his family, his two children and his wife, are slowly going to get sick and die, all die, unless he kills one of them.
Oh. Okay.
And it devolves into like trying to get out of it, but it's the inevitability of what is happening, and also the naturalness of it that makes it a very good movie. I think I really liked it a lot, even with all, everything I mentioned. I think it works very well at both at telling that story. It's all the style decisions are make the story work even better.
It sounds like it's an interesting turn for the director, because he, from what I remember, he hasn't really dealt with the supernatural that much. So,
I mean, The Lobster is a movie where if you're not married,
it is, but it's not an ominous supernatural. It's just a kind of like it's a supernatural that is the literal definition of the word. It's outside of the natural world. Yeah. But this sounds like supernatural in the spooky, scary way. So I'm definitely fascinated by this movie now.
Yeah. But there's no literal scares. It's all about these characters dealing with the inevitability of what is happening to them, and how there's no escape, and how maybe it's their fault, maybe it's not, maybe it's just that kid.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested because I have heard so much, and you've brought this movie up, I think, thrice now. So I'm like, okay. All right, and that kid, he was in the movie 71, which I adored, so maybe I'll give it a try. He was also in Dunkirk, but I don't care about that. Okay. I'm definitely moving it further up my list, for sure.
We're going to do a Yorgos Lanthimos episode just so I can make you watch those movies.
Damn it. You figured out the cheat code.
Any do you guys have any other honorable mentions, like stuff you just want to mention that people should look into?
The one that I was really fighting to put on my list but decided at the last minute not to was Exorcist 3. That's a good one. That movie's phenomenal, and it's everything you could want. And actually, I think more than the original Exorcist in some ways. Just don't ever watch the second one. But yeah, go check out Exorcist 3. It's on Shudder right now. It's quite good.
It's really good. Yeah, Exorcist 3. That would have been one of my honorable mentions, honestly. Like, it's because I watched it just the other night, and it is the true sequel. Mm-hmm. If that was the movie that they had made directly after, then The Exorcist would be like the best horror franchise if they had just kept on making them at that level of quality.
Yep.
Like, it's just, it's really strong. So yeah, check that one out. Again, performances in that are fantastic.
Yes.
I have a couple, and I'm just going to list them off. The Hallow.
Yes.
Which is a Corn Hardy's first movie. It's really sad that he was forced to direct The Nun, but hey, we all do things for
what are you gonna do
for money. But yeah, The Hallow, really creepy small Irish movie, but it does a lot with very little. So yeah, definitely check that one out. This is a documentary called The Nightmare.
Yes,
and if you haven't seen The Nightmare, it is just as effective and creepy as any of the scariest movies on my list. But it's all about real things and real experiences that people are having. And it's just an interesting explanation or exploration into people's psyches and what's going on when people sleep. And I think we can all relate to weirdness while sleeping. So go check that one out. Let's see, I want to do one more. The Invitation, if you haven't seen that one.
Oh, yes. I
talk about that one a lot, but yeah.
That's
yeah.
great. That's a, yeah. That last shot is incredible.
Yes. Yes.
Those lamps. All those lamps. Yeah. So, those are my honorables. Yeah.
One I want to mention, because it's really worth checking out, I feel like... The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, the first horror movie, more or less.
Yeah.
That I think is the German expressionism of a hypnotist that uses somnambulism. I don't know how to say that in English.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, and I speak English, so don't worry about it.
Somnambulism to commit murders. I think it's all like style and weird backgrounds that give the movie an all weird and unnatural effect. And I think it's effective at still being really creepy to watch today. And another I really like a movie. That's not talked about as much in Del Toro's filmography is The Devil's Backbone.
Yes.
Which is a very creepy movie that I really liked a lot and I feel like deserves a lot of love.
I have the Criterion collection that has like all three of his films on it, Devil's Backbone, Kronos, and Pan's Labyrinth, and I need to rewatch that movie. Like, it's just staring at me right now. So yeah, thank you for mentioning that because it reminds me I need to see it again.
Yeah, that movie's great. Actually, that's a great pairing with Under the Shadow. Actually, there's some similarities between the films. That's a great honorable mention. If you haven't seen that one, yeah, I think that might be my favorite of his non-English language films, so go check that out. So, yeah.
Let's do some plugs. Eric, do you want to go first?
I'm Eric Fedorchak. You can find me on at Eric_Fedor on Instagram. I've got pictures of dogs and my cats and food that I cook sometimes and comic books I collect. Wow, this feels weird to actually be able to plug a podcast I'm on. I'm also on the Phantom Zone podcast on a pretty regular basis where we are much more out of control and I am generally much more offensive. You can also find me floating around the titular Facebook group, The Phantom Zone, where I will talk to you about comics and a wealth of other things if you want to listen. And if not, I'll leave you alone. I'm sorry I offered.
Alan?
I always like having somebody else to plug Phantom Zone because I don't know how to plug it. but yeah, that show, I'm on there as well. Monster Mash podcast coming out very, very soon. We're counting down the days. but yeah, go listen to that when it comes out. preview episode should be out Friday before Halloween, so yeah, go look forward to that. First episode on Halloween, we'll have Eric Sayor. Eric Fedorchak does not have an episode yet, but
not yet.
Will soon.
I will.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a Venom episode of The Phantom Zone out by the time this comes out?
I'm so tempted to go see it this weekend, but that's not a discussion for the show.
Yeah.
There was a plan for a Venom episode, and then things were revealed, and so yeah. Yeah, that's a sore subject, but but there will be a this is something I feel we can announce even though we haven't recorded it yet. There will be a Swamp Thing episode,
yes,
also on Halloween. So look forward to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll just do my quick plugs. Follow me on Twitter at Isir, and watch a foreign horror film. Just pick a random one we talked about or we didn't talk about, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Don't just watch stuff in English.
And, yep. And I'll say this. If you have a playlist that's full of horror movies and you're like, I'm just going to spend a whole day watching horror movies, spread your foreign horror films out in between English language horror movies. That way it's less intimidating.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my recommendation to anybody who's like, I have 15 movies that are all in Korean and German on my list and I don't know what to do. So yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that's all for this week. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Fuck Roland Emmerich.